It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. When you hear the name Charlie Chaplin, what images come to mind? A swiftly moving little fellow with a small mustache, oversized shoes, and a bowler hat, twirling a cane, and, well, lots and lots of sight gags, for sure. It's an image that has now been around for 100 years. This year marks the centennial celebration of Chaplin's first appearance on film as the little tramp character in the 1914 film Kid Auto Races at Venice Beach. That film will be shown and celebrated this Sunday at the Hollywood Theater in Dormont as part of a special event, also featuring a showing of The Pawn Shop and two other Charlie Chaplin films. The Pawn Shop will feature a brand new score written and performed by Pittsburgh's own Tom Roberts, who joins us now in Studio A. Tom Roberts, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be back.
Also joining us is Dan Kamen. He is author of Charlie Chaplin's One-Man Show and The Comedy of Charlie Chaplin. Dan Kamen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Nice to be here, Paul.
Dan, since you are the Chaplin expert, let me begin with you. The film Kid Auto Races at Venice Beach. This marks the first film appearance by the little tramp character, but is it necessarily Charlie Chaplin's first appearance on film?
Actually, it was his second film to be released. His first film was called Making a Living, and he was hired off the stage. He was a stage touring artist, toured America back and forth doing in vaudeville in a comedy sketches with a British comedy troupe, and he played always a upper-class, foppish, British drunk in those films. And in his first film, he automatically gravitated to that kind of character, played a guy with a monocle and kind of somebody impersonating a British upper-class character who was really just a con man. And nobody much liked that film. And so he was in danger. He'd quit his stage career. And Mack Sennett, who ran Keystone Comedy Company, said, come up with something good or you're out of here, basically. And he went to the wardrobe and put a bunch of mismatched clothing together, big pants worn by Fatty Arbuckle, giant pants, a coat that was too tight. And Sennett was disappointed when he first saw him because he thought he was a much older guy. Chaplin was 24 at the time, but he looked about 16. And so he put a little mustache on his face, a little square mustache, carefully trimmed so it didn't hide his facial expression, and a little derby hat, and he automatically became the character. He said as soon as he had the clothes on, he knew who he was. And it's a character that he played for the next quarter century and completely mesmerized the whole world with his style of physical, visual, kinetic comedy, because he made everything he did funny. Walking was funny.
And I was watching the film, which you can see online, but we would encourage you to go to the Dormont on Sunday and see it on the big screen. But I was trying to get a feel for, you know, what he's doing here and explain this whole thing. That there were, in fact, not far from Hollywood, Venice Beach in California, in the L.A. area, there were, in the early days of automobiles, there were these auto races. And so this was an actual event with people who weren't movie extras. They were there to watch that event. And then Charlie Chaplin shows up and the cameras are rolling. And what's going on here?
Well, in those days, they would, you know, movies were made everywhere, and they would capitalize. If there was a fire, they'd send the crew. Mack Sennett would send the crew to the fire so they could film and get, you know, something that they could not afford to produce themselves, a whole burning house. In this case, it was a kid's – there were real little cars on one day, and this day it was kind of a soapbox derby, what we would call a soapbox derby, where the cars roll down a hill like the CMU what do they call those things through Schenley Park? I used to go to school there.
The Grand Prix?
The students would make non-motor vehicles.
Soapbox Derby type of thing?
It's got a higher class name.
I can't remember its name.
Yeah.
But these are the
buggy
cars.
Buggy races, they called them.
And these are the cars that don't have motors. Basically.
So it was a real event where kids are rolling down a long hill in these fragile cars. And I'm sure they didn't ask permission. The film crew just showed up, and it looked like a legitimate film crew. And, you know, they just said, do something funny. So what they did was they set up a dummy camera. Somebody was cranking away with a camera, and another camera was filming the first cameraman. And Charlie just plays a man in the crowd who who sees the camera and wants to be the center of attention. So he keeps upstaging the kids. He keeps walking between the kids and the camera.
Which is so unlike anything anyone would do today. So, I mean, 100 years later, a camera shows up. People still are waving at it. And he's like a typical guy who suddenly wants to be the center of attention. And the people in the film apparently have no idea who he is or what's going on or that this is going to end up on screen somewhere.
Well, he's everybody he's a photo bomber. Yeah, he's the photo bomber of 1914.
Well, he's everybody else looks normal except – and he's dressed in this sort of outlandish costume that doesn't fit. What's fascinating about the film is we're watching the first audience – discover Charlie Chaplin's character that became so world famous and put American films really on the map worldwide and made movies popular. Literally, people were afraid to go into movie theaters in those days, middle class people, because they were seen as dark places where women might get hit on and you know, the kind of lower class people, you know, cheap entertainment, you know, people of means, you know, would go to vaudeville theaters and legit theaters and opera houses. But everybody started – the word started going around. There's this guy doing films that are so funny. You got to see him.
So this raised the bar on film. And also you had Charlie Chaplin doing what I guess a lot of comedians had to do in those days. Harold Lloyd, for example, who did his own stunts. Charlie Chaplin is really – if you watch this film, he's putting himself in harm's way. He's standing out there in front of not just the kiddie cars that are coming down the ramp, but also the motorized cars that are racing. He looks like he's standing, you know, within a hair's distance of a passing racing car.
Exactly. And then the cameraman, of course, who's an actor, you know, just takes him and throws him down. He takes these amazing falls.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only one joke and he keeps repeating it. You know, they just he gets in the camera and they get pissed off and they keeps repeating. But what's amazing is in the background, you watch people slowly starting to look away from the kids and start to focus on him and start to laugh. We watch the first audience discovering Charlie Chaplin.
Tom Roberts, The Pawn Shop, will be showing along with the film we were just describing, Kid Auto Races at Venice Beach. And The Pawn Shop came along 2 years later. What can you tell us about this film?
Well, we've got the mime. Geez, for a mime, you can't shut up, can you?
My secret.
So, well, yeah. Yes, that's his secret power. The Pawn Shop, this is actually a film. I should probably back up a little bit. This project of doing Chaplin films was initiated about 2 years ago. The Pittsburgh Symphony had engaged me to compose music for two Chaplin films for that Paris City of Lights Festival they did. And it just turned out to be so successful that I met Dan as a result of this. And Dan is the one who said, you know, I do this film, The Pawn Shop, as a part of my act. And would you consider composing a score for it? And I went, sure. So –
Now the Pawn Shop already has a score.
Well, any of these things theoretically have a score. I mean, when these movies came out, some of them would come with what was called a cue sheet. There was no music that was attached to these films. You know, these were, depending upon the size of the theater, I guess most theaters had orchestras, but the smaller, you know, more makeshift places would have a pianist. Some of the places that couldn't afford an orchestra would have had an organist that would have played. And some of the films would have come with what was called a cue sheet. And the cue sheet was a series of basically music, generic music that could be applied to a film. We've seen numbers of cue sheets for various films. There was actually a member of the Pittsburgh Symphony was one of the guys who was involved with writing a lot of this generic music. His name was Zamechnik. He was a violinist, I think under Victor Herbert, and found out that he could make a heck of a lot more money composing music that could be used for a variety of situations. Like he'd have Hurry Number 1, Hurry Number 45. So if someone is running, you could play Hurry. And then there's scenes for domestic bliss. And then there's, you know, the Indians are tying you up at the stake, and then you could play.
So nothing, but nothing specifically done for these scenes. So when you were assigned, or when you accepted the invitation to approach this project, what approach did you decide on? What did you, as you watched the film, think? I can accentuate all of this in a certain way.
Paul, what a great question! You are so good at this. As he just says, yeah, I am. Well, one of the things that Chaplin is famous for saying is, I could never get these music arrangers to understand you do not make funny music. You don't write funny music for this. It's not funny. Chaplin scores are immaculate. They're just the most perfect things imaginable for these things. So I took the cue from Chaplin of writing things that sound beautiful and elegant. Here's a great example. There's a film called The Rounders, which is an early Chaplin film with Arbuckle, and they play drunks. And there's two versions that are available that have different soundtracks. One of them has this very elegant music. The other one has a great ragtime or Paragon Ragtime Orchestra providing music, but it's not funny. I showed it at Jerry's Records the other days, and no one laughed at it. But if I showed you the version that has this very delicate, elegant salon music, you'd be down on the floor laughing. So trying to create things for these films is you have to create some sort of irony. You have to disappear within the film itself. The approach that I've tried to use is very similar to the approach that Chaplin himself did when writing, you know, or improvising these films and writing on film. Imagining themes for each individual character. In the pawn shop itself, there are several characters. Henry Bergman, the long-term member of Chaplin's company, plays a Jewish pawnbroker. And so the Bergman character has a very klezmery kind of theme. And then Chaplin's theme is kind of built on that same idea, but it's turned into a major thing. And then using little motifs that work within this the thing to create basically a dream. Someone has said that a silent film is best experienced as being in a dream where you just walk in and disappear within it. My dream has taken about a year and a half to complete on this film.
And did you do it all? Did you just compose it all? Is it written for a keyboard, for an orchestra?
I imagine it as being written for a full orchestra. I'm going to be doing it simply on the piano this time in like kind of the grand tradition of Franz Liszt of the piano transcription. As Chaplin can turn a tuba into an umbrella stand, I can turn a piano into a full orchestra.
Very good.
I have to add that all four films that are being shown Sunday are with Tom's scores, and I'm an aficionado of this stuff. I've gone all over the world to see showings of Chaplin's films, and the first four films, 50 or so films that he made, he did not score because he didn't own the rights to them. Later, he owned the rights to his own films, and he wrote his own scores eventually for them. But the earlier ones are up for grabs, and they've been done with all, and I have to say, Tom's scores are, you know, among the best I've ever heard. His score for 1 a.m., which is Chaplin coming home drunk at 1 in the morning, is like a nocturne, and it makes the film more hilarious than it's ever been.
The program is Silence Please at the Hollywood Theater in Dormont, 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and the Pawn Shop film is featuring a brand new score by one of our guests, Tom Roberts. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Paul, thank you so much.
And
nice to be here.
Dan Kamen, author of Charlie Chaplin's One Man Show and the comedy of Charlie Chaplin. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Have a great weekend, everyone.